Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Words and names are often weaponized to dehumanize or insult. People of color are often the recipients of these words. Immigrants have, since the early days of the country, had to change their names or embrace a nickname because their names were too hard to pronounce or make it easier to assimilate. Social activist, playwright, and former civil rights attorney Irma Herrera says it's time to embrace your name and give people a chance to learn how to say it correctly. Herrera created the one-woman play, Why Would I Mispronounce My Own Name, almost a decade ago. It tackles the power of a name and addresses social justice issues of the day. Herrera brings the show to San Antonio's Trinity University November 13th. She explains how the show transformed her identity from a civil rights attorney and activist to an oral storyteller.
When I left law the first time, I went into journalism and I started writing, and I was writing about the issues that I care about, you know, about prejudice, about opportunity, about the Latino community, because I felt that there's so many myths and misunderstandings and mischaracterizations of who we are. And I'm Chicana, Mexican-American, born and raised in South Texas. But we have a very broad community of people now called Latino, Latinx, Hispanic. The term doesn't really matter. We kind of know who we're talking about, people from Spanish-speaking countries in this hemisphere. And so I went into journalism. I did that for a few years, and I went back to law, and then I left law again, and I started working with a media organization, New America Media in San Francisco, and writing about immigration and women. And then that job ended because I was working on a grant that was set to sunset in 3 years at a time when we thought we were going to get massive, comprehensive immigration reform. And when that job ended, I went back to just my own creative writing. And I ended up taking a class with a friend because she encouraged me to join her at a theater, because she said the teacher, David Ford, was such a great teacher, and he really was able to get to whatever it was the story you wanted to tell. I was writing a novel at that time, so I felt like I needed some encouragement and a little bit of oomph. And so I took the class and I fell in love with oral storytelling. And it turned out that every week I'd show up for class and do my 15 minutes on my feet. And often it was a story about some form of injustice that was related to my observations of the world around me. And the teacher, David, said, well, you know, that's a rant, but I think we can turn it into theater. And some of the stories were about names and how our failure or our unwillingness to learn how to say someone's name correctly, for example, Kamala, is a form of disrespect, right? And it's true, some names are more difficult than others for people, depending what your native language is. But we should at least make an attempt to say a person's name the way they pronounce it. And it's not up to us to have an opinion about whether they're saying their name correctly or not, right? I know someone whose name is Kamala. That's how she says her name. But Kamala Harris pronounces it Kamala. I also saw a story where someone says Kamala Harris is mispronouncing her name in, you know, our native language. Maybe it's Gujarati. I don't know. It's really Kamala, right? But she gets to decide. We get to decide. If you call Alexander Alex and he wants to be called Alexander, hopefully you respect that, right? Some Kathleens don't want to be called Kathy. But when it comes to Latinos or people who are perceived as the perpetual outsiders or immigrants, people are often unwilling to call us by our name. It's like, well, don't you have a nickname? Can I call you something else? Oh, I can't say that. Yes, you can. You can at least try. So I ended up weaving together a bunch of stories related to names to create a theater piece that was originally called Tell Me Your Name. And a friend of mine who's a producer of theater once said to me, are you wedded to the name of your play? And I said, well, I picked it. And he said, but it tells me nothing about what the play is about. Are you just like a friendly person who introduces yourself to everybody? And well, kind of. And he said, why don't you look at your script? Because I think somewhere in the script, you're going to find a phrase that captures more of what your play is about. I said, okay, I'll have a look at it. And as I was leaving, I said, here's the deal, Bruce. I have no control over whether someone can say or wants to say my name correctly, but why would I mispronounce my own name? And he said, that's a good title. And that's how I came to have the title of the play, because I say my name, Irma Herrera. It's true. I don't fight with a machine that calls and says, this is UCSF Medical Center calling for Irma Herrera. If this is Irma, press 1. I'm not going to spend my energy fighting with a pre-recorded machine. But if I'm going to have a relationship with somebody, I would tell them, my name is pronounced Irma, not Irma. And that happens all the time. And people say, oh, I'm really sorry. And I say, that's fine. You can't know until somebody tells you. So I don't take offense if somebody calls me Irma when I meet them the first time, or if they slip up because that's what it looks like to them. I just remind them, I'm Irma, not Irma.
And this has been a show that you have performed now, like you said, for almost a decade. And it's not the same show every time. World events do have an impact on what you're doing. And we need to point out that we are taping this less than a week before the presidential election. It will air by the time we hopefully know who the next president will be. Can't guarantee anything at the time that I'm recording this. But, you know, the timing is obviously going to make an impact, I think, on your upcoming show at Trinity University. So can you tell us a little bit how you have incorporated current events into your one-woman show?
Absolutely. And it's true. I don't know what one scene in my show will look like when I present it at Trinity, because I have a scene in which I talk about the power of words and how words, you know, as kids, we're told sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will never hurt you. And that's not true. Words have enormous power and they can be weaponized to foment hate. We know that. We've seen it. And then I talk about current events that we've seen in the last few years. You know, Mother Emmanuel Church, the synagogue, the Pulse nightclub, El Paso. And I could go on and on. The 3 Palestinian ancestry kids shot in Burlington, Vermont. And then I show a picture of Ruby Bridges that was painted by Norman Rockwell when she integrated the New Orleans public schools. And I talk about how in that painting that Rockwell did, you see 4 marshals walking a 6-year-old girl to school. And in the background, you see the N-word written on a wall. And how people went out in mass protesting integration and calling African-American people the worst of names. It fades into a picture of Kamala Harris walking in Ruby's shadow. I think you've probably seen that meme. It was very popular on the internet right after Kamala was picked by Joe Biden to be the vice presidential candidate. And I used that scene and that particular set of images to then talk about the power of words and my own hopes for what will happen with the next administration, and that we can move away from a place where it's become acceptable and normalized to refer to entire groups of people as garbage and as people who are rapists and, you know, murderers and coming from insane asylums. We know that there's so many people in this country who are undocumented, who are really good people that are contributing in so many ways, from having been and continuing to be the essential workers, to being people who are working in medicine, saving lives of people today. And so I hope to use my play as a vehicle for starting and continuing the conversation of how do we create a society that is caring and decent and gives people the dignity that every human being deserves, because nobody is garbage. No human being is garbage, and no human being is an illegal. They're a human being, a person. They are not a foreign alien from outer space or deep from under the earth. So that's what I do with my play. And I am working on a new play on some of the same themes. Its working title is Class Migrant, but I still have a lot of love for, why would I mispronounce my own name? And it keeps me engaged because I can incorporate things that are happening all the time in the world around us and tie them in to our history as a nation. You know, we have a glorious history. We also have some ugly things that happened in our country. And I hope that as kids work their way through school and as we adults continue to educate ourselves about history, that we don't whitewash the way efforts are made all over the country. Do you know that in the last 2 years, they have banned 10,000 books in public schools and public libraries? And the majority of these books were written by people of color and folks from the LGBT community, giving our own experiences and historical perspective of what's gone on in our communities in the last several hundred years. We can't hide the truth. Kids really want to know. All of us deserve to know and should have the freedom to learn an accurate version of history. So I get to talk about all those things in my play. I never get bored.
Irma Herrera is an activist, former civil rights lawyer, and writer of the one-woman play, Why Would I Mispronounce My Own Name? Herrera brings the show to San Antonio's Trinity University Wednesday, November 13th. When we come back, the topics tackled in Herrera's show persist over the years.
People would say, oh my God, it is so relevant to today. And then we saw the rise of Trumpism, and it was like, oh my God, your show is so relevant today. And here we are years later, and it's like, your show is more relevant than ever.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The recent election season was particularly bitter. Negative words, insulting words, vulgar words, often aimed at immigrants and people of color, tended to get the most oxygen on the airwaves. Anti-immigrant racist language is nothing new in the history of the U.S., though today these words are amplified, reinforced, and recycled on social media. Playwright and activist Irma Herrera says words not just have the power to harm, but the power to heal. Her show, Why Would I Mispronounce My Own Name, tackles some of the social issues that will never cease to be relevant.
It's interesting, this question about, you know, what we've seen historically. When I first presented my play almost 10 years ago, people would say, oh my God, it is so relevant to today. And then we saw the rise of Trumpism, and it was like, oh my God, your show is so relevant today. And here we are years later, and it's like, your show is more relevant than ever today. So we've always been fighting the push against being mistreated and viewed as less than. And that's very much what my show is about. You know, speaking of words, one of the string of words I use is what we Mexican Americans have been called over a period of time, right? And initially, I had some hesitation, like, do I want to use the words spick, greaser, meskin, taco, wetback, but those were real words we've been called. You know, growing up, the word illegal was never used to identify us. It was unheard of. That's a more recent vintage. You know, that's become a very powerful word that really dehumanizes people. So I do think it's important to say words that connect with some of the stories I'm telling. One of the stories, so after George Floyd was killed, I chose to rewrite a scene to talk about police violence against African Americans, but it isn't just African Americans, right? I talk about the case of Joe Campos Torres in Houston, which was before Rodney King. And many people have forgotten about Rodney King, right? But Rodney King's case was the first instance where the entire world saw with our own eyes what communities of color have been saying about how the police treats them, right? The official police report from LAPD was just another black man injured while resisting arrest. But lo and behold, there was a videotape showing an unarmed man being kicked, tased, and hit with a baton who was already on the floor. And yet, that evidence wasn't enough to convict the police officers initially. An all-white jury gave them an acquittal. There were further charges brought under federal law. So over the years, we've seen growing evidence, and then with cell phones and with social media, it reached a point where we could no longer deny that this was the reality. And then because I was taking my play to Texas last year, I had heard the podcast Chicano Squad, but it was about the murder of Joe Campos Torres in Houston in the 70s. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he got into a bar brawl. They came and arrested him, and they beat him up, and then they took him to jail to book him. And the booking sergeant said, no, take him to ER. He's too beat up. But they didn't do that. They took him to Buffalo Bayou, and one of the police officers said, you think the wetback can swim? And they threw him in the bayou. And 2 days later, his body was found. And it was a huge scandal. There were no, body cams. There was no bystander recording this. But one rookie officer who was present among the six white officers broke the code of silence and testified. And they ended up with a conviction of two police officers, but it was a conviction for negligent homicide. And they got 1 year suspended probation and a $1 fine. And that's such an important story that most people, even Latinos, Mexican Americans who grew up, we don't know that story. And I give that story to provide some context of abuse of power. And abuse of power can happen by any group, right? We saw in Memphis, African American officers beating and killing an African American man, 2 years ago? And I'm not saying that all police are bad, of course not, but we can create institutions where we dehumanize people. And that allows us to mistreat them and to abuse them. And the city of Houston, the mayor formally apologized for that incident. And there's actually a park and a running trail in Buffalo Bayou with the story of Joe Campos Torres' murder there. So all of those things are pieces of the story I tell. The story is rooted in my own history, growing up in South Texas, in Alice, Texas, population 18,000. And when I was growing up, it was extremely segregated. And now there's hardly any white folks left in Alice. It's an overwhelmingly Mexican-American community. But it's a story about growing up in segregation, growing up experiencing discrimination. It's about affirmative action and having the opportunity to become a lawyer. And it's about working as a civil rights lawyer and using my voice to amplify the communities that are underrepresented and still mistreated and marginalized. So I get to tie in my own personal story with the history of the Mexican American community in Texas and in the Southwest and with current events.
You know, maybe you pull them in with the fact, oh, she's going to be telling some interesting stories about names and mispronunciations. That's happened to me, too. But then you hit them with these zingers, you know, with social justice. And you tie it all together in a really comprehensive package. I'm curious as to, what the reactions are. You've already mentioned that some people have had the same experiences with their names, but I'm wondering how people have been touched by your show.
I get really positive reaction, not just right after the show when people see it, but sometimes months later, I will get a text or an email or a comment on social media. And one that really sticks out with me was a woman who saw an earlier version of my show. And she wrote and she said, my husband and I just visited the Whitney Plantation outside of New Orleans. And it's a museum that's dedicated to telling the history of slavery. We have a lot of antebellum places you can visit, right? Plantations, but they're about the grandeur of the South in the heyday of the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. This particular plantation is a museum. And she said, we had a wonderful docent, and as she walked to the monument that has the names of the people who were enslaved there, she turned to us and she said, these were not their real names. These were the names that were given to them by the people who owned them. And she said, I turned to my husband, Wayne, and I said, wow, this gives more meaning to Irma's show and the stories about names and the impact they have on how we're seen is everywhere if we just look for it. That was one of the most wonderful comments about how my play had impacted other people. But I've also had folks tell me stories like a woman who said, when her mother was getting naturalized to become a United States citizen, as she and her dad were helping the mom fill out the application, it said, would you like to change your name? And that was the first time I learned that the application for citizenship had that choice. And she said, we read the question to her and we fully expected the answer to be no. And she said, yes. And what do you mean you want to change your name? And she said, well, the name you know me by, that's not my real name. When my family moved here from Mexico and I was a little girl, that's what they called me at school. And that's the name they gave me. But my name isn't Angie. My name is Maria de Los Angeles. I want my name back. And the woman said, my dad and I were so irritated because that meant we were going to have to change her social security, her insurance. And she said, but seeing your play really brought it home about how she lost something that was meaningful for her, even though she was only 6 years old. And here she is, una mujer en sus sesentas, and she wants to get her name back. I always tell people it's never too late. If you feel that the name you've been known by professionally or that you use to help people be more comfortable with you, if you've now decided that's not what you want to be called, it's okay. You'll meet resistance, but it's your right to tell people, I now wish to be called by my real name, not the name I've been using because it was convenient for you.
Well, you hinted at it a little while ago, but you do have a new show in the works. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? I understand that it had a preview in California not too long ago.
Yeah, I was invited to be part of a festival that was Women Storytellers at the Marsh Theater, where I've already had a run twice. And so I decided to go ahead and preview 20 minutes of the material. I have a lot of material, but I haven't finished shaping it. But it's a story about the value of education and opportunity and how it has enabled me to move from a working class neighborhood family where I grew up and my family, some of my family still in Alice, Texas, to having the life of an, you know, upper income professional class person who has many privileges. You know, I've been able to travel around the world, something I only dreamed of when I was little. And so I share stories about what it's like to be poor, both my own experiences and things that people share with me or interactions I have with folks, because I'm still very connected, not just to the community where I grew up in, but to the community, the Latino community of the Bay Area, where I now live and have lived for all of my adult life. So it's the discomfort I feel when a little Mexicanita girl of 10 or 12 rings my doorbell on Halloween and says, is this your house, lady? Wow, it's really beautiful. And to imagine, you know, the neighborhood where she grew up and to think of the neighborhood where I grew up and where I live now and how they're so different. And so I drive through neighborhoods that look like the neighborhood where I grew up in, and I hear people say, oh, you don't want to drive on that street to get to X, Y, or Z. It's better to take another route. And I know what they're saying. You know, that's a poor neighborhood. And I think to myself, yeah, that looks like the neighborhood where I grew up. That doesn't make it dangerous. It's just a neighborhood that's different from the one I grew up in. And another piece of my story in my new play is a conversation with my friend Maria, who is no longer with us, but Maria was a lawyer at MALDEF also, and she had grown up in a farm worker family in California. And she went to law school here in Berkeley, and she was a lawyer in LA. But when she would visit, and she would look around and she would say, Irma, look at all these rich people's houses. How can so many people have so much and other people work so hard and they have nothing? That is so unfair. And then she would look at me and she would say, Irma, we're those people now. We live in these neighborhoods. And it just leaves me thinking about the privilege I have and the opportunities I have and how I wish those to be available to everybody.
Can you give us a few details about the upcoming performance on November 13th?
Yes. Yes. It's part of the fall festival that Trinity has, where they have a bunch of different offerings, both during the day and in the evening. And my show is on Wednesday, November 13 at 6:30 p.m. And it's at the Ruth Taylor Recital Hall. It is free. It's open to the public. And the show itself lasts 1 hour. And then after the show, there's 30 minutes for anyone who would like to stay to share their own stories or comment or ask questions about my show and how I developed it. And I'll also be visiting some classes available to meet with students at Trinity while I'm there. And I invite all my gentes, my friends from San Antonio. I went to St. Mary's University. I have a lot of friends and family in San Antonio, and I invite all of them to come out. Están invitados. I look forward to seeing whoever can join. And the show isn't just for Latinos. It's for everyone. Anyone can see a piece of themselves in the stories that I share, because we all have the experience of feeling marginalized and othered. It doesn't matter if you're the richest white man in the planet. We've all experienced what it's like to be mistreated.
And can I also just say, I love the little feature that you have on your emails, hear me say my name. I think that's
that. Yes. So there's various software tools that are available online, and they're all free. There's also paid versions. But if you have a name that's pronounced in a way that's perhaps unconventional or different, and it could be the Kamala difference or Kirsten versus Kirsten, you can download software and link it to your social media, your email signature block that people can click, and it says how you pronounce your name. And I first learned about this software when I learned about Name Coach. That's one of the companies. And the guy who developed it has a PhD in philosophy from Stanford, but he said he was at his sister's college graduation, and they're South Asian of Indian ancestry. And he said her name was so mispronounced that I couldn't stand it. So he said, I started thinking of how all this technology could be put to use to help people. There's Name Coach, there's Name Drop, and there's other software programs that allow you to tape your own name. And it's used by schools and colleges. So some public schools, for example, when you enroll your kid in kindergarten, they'll ask the parent, how do you say your child's name? And then a teacher can hear it. Because my teacher friends tell me, oh my God, the first day of school is petrifying because you get a list of names that are unfamiliar to you. And you know how kids can be so cruel if you mispronounce someone's name and then they start using it to tease one another. So that's really helpful. It's used by colleges in preparing for college graduation ceremonies for commencements. So yes, there is technology to help. And if you're calling someone and you don't know how their name is pronounced, it's always okay to ask someone, tell me how you say your name. I tell a story in my play where a friend of mine told me that they called her husband, whose name is Esteban Hidalgo, and they pronounced it Esteban Hidalgo. And she told them it's pronounced Esteban Hidalgo. And the person said, Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm not good with Spanish. I can't roll my R's. Well, there are
Are
no
no
R's
R's.
in Esteban Hidalgo, right? So people share all kinds of stories with me, from the most ridiculous to the most moving and, touching.
Irma Herrera is a playwright, activist, and former civil rights attorney. The South Texas native and California resident is touring with her one-woman play, Why Would I Mispronounce My Own Name? Its final performance of the year is Wednesday, November 13th at Trinity University's Ruth Taylor Recital Hall in San Antonio. The free performance starts at 6:30 p.m. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.